What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 52. Every rose has its thorns. I give you a lot of credit, Dave. Usually I forget, actually almost all the time, I forget to do the tagline contest for the week. This time, Dave picked me up, and he picked a pretty good one.
I did it when I did the outline this time.
Yeah, thank you for doing that. One less thing off my plate, and a good one to boot. So if you agree with me, and you know the movie that Every Rose Has Its Thorns comes from, a little hint for you, it was a movie we talked a wee bit about last week, zip it off to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can get at us, or get at Dave more specifically, on the Twitter @moviesonup, or leave it on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup. If your guess is correct, and if we pick you, you will be our, is it official to say, our second winner of a prize pack?
I don't know how many we've sent out. We've had quite a few winners. We just haven't sent anything out.
That's true. We've sent zero out, but you could join that waiting list of people that are waiting to get any Movies On Up prize package from Dave and myself, but only if you can identify the tagline for Every Rose Has Its Thorns. Dave, happy anniversary week.
It's a big week for us.
It is. I guess I just spoiled what it was.
This is our anniversary week. We've been doing Movies On Up for 52 weeks. I meant to count up how many episodes we've done because we mucked that all up, but
yeah,
we've done 52 weeks, which is impressive.
Yeah, for a couple folks that have commitment issues.
Yeah. I mean, I missed a couple with having a baby and going to Atlanta, and for the most part, we put out an episode every week.
On average, we've got more than...
I think we missed a week, and that was it, over a year.
That's we've got more than 52 episodes, so yeah, you're welcome.
So yeah, it's a big week for us.
We're going to do something kind of special to celebrate our anniversary.
We'll get more about that at the end.
Yeah, you just have to stick with us. You've stuck with us for 52 weeks, so stick with us for another 52 minutes, or just refer back to last week, because we told you what we were going to do last week. But hang out with us. More on that at the end of the show. It's a big week for us, a big week for Tony Stark. Iron Man 3 made all of the money.
A lot of the money.
All of the money.
We set over under at 125. I would have been comfortable going over at 140. I thought it would top out at the 150 range. I was wrong. $174.1 million. That's a $40,946 per screen average, which one of the best ever. Second biggest opening ever behind the Avengers last year. So yeah, it did pretty well.
I'd say.
Yeah, pretty big. Second place, $7.5 million for Pain and Gain. 42, $6 million for 3. Oblivion, 68% drop down to 5.6 for 4th place. And then The Croods hung in there at 5 with another 4.2. Massive week for Iron Man. It's Friday was only the 8th biggest Friday ever, but it's Saturday was the 2nd biggest ever by a large margin. So it's just in a position where it's the 2nd biggest movie ever.
We kind of mentioned it when we first started talking about Iron Man 3, or when it got really close, was that it seemed that it was going to be more a sequel to Avengers than it would be like a sequel to Iron Man 2. And I think its performance really is more of a follow-up in the vein of what Avengers did as opposed to Iron Man 2.
Yeah, but I mean, Avengers 2, I think, will open even bigger than Avengers.
Yeah.
But 174? Two summers in a row, Disney has kicked it off. $200 million last year, $174 million this year. Worldwide, it's at $680 million already. Like, it's going to be at that billion in no time.
Probably by the end of the month, right?
Yeah, because you figure next week it'll drop a little bit, but it's probably in the 85 to 90 to 100 range next week, too.
I bet it's still over 100.
Word of mouth is going to deal with it. Yeah, there's a lot of criticism about it, but there's a lot of positive about it, too. And I think the criticism that's coming from it is more in the vein of, I didn't like it, you kind of need to see it for yourself. Because there is some polarizing moments in it that you do kind of need to see for yourself.
Yeah, it's very hard to talk about this movie without getting into spoilers. So we're going to just really kind of stay away from any plot things. But I mean, if you were one of the 6 people in America that has not seen the movie, definitely get out and see it before somebody ruins it for you. I think you'll have a good time. I mean, if you liked The Avengers, I think it's pretty tonally similar to that.
If you like what Shane Black has done. I mean, it was a very Shane Black movie. It was a very, Lethal Weapon, Last Boy Scout, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It had that sense of humor and that tone to it, to where it was a good action movie,
which I think worked well with Tony Stark as a character.
Yes,
he was a good director to come in and handle that. Yeah, I thought it was a very enjoyable movie. I think that, you know, for whatever reason you haven't seen Iron Man 2 and you're thinking, well, I probably shouldn't see. No, don't worry about it.
You don't need to see Iron Man 2. If you've seen Iron Man and the Avengers, Iron Man 3 you're fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if you've just seen the Avengers, you could step right into Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
It's fine. Everybody does good in it. It was a great kickoff to the summer.
Yeah.
I understand some of the complaints. They're not complaints to me. I don't care enough.
Yeah, I guess I really didn't read anything on the movie. I'm glad I didn't before I went in. And then after, you know, I've already made up my mind. I don't care what anybody else thinks at that point.
There were some ballsy decisions.
Yes.
That were very, very ballsy and I think paid off. So I really liked it. I think it's a kickoff to what's going to be a fun summer, an awesome summer. I think Iron Man 3 kicks it off just as well as the Avengers did last year.
Definitely. And we mentioned that's was absolutely hands down, far and away, the big winner. There was really nothing else released this week at all, and it was probably a good idea.
One, the Iceman, the Michael Shannon movie, that released on 4 screens, and it did very well, 87,000. So that's at 21,000 per screen, just under 22. So
it looked really good.
It looks really good. It's got Captain America in it, Michael Shannon. So it's got Captain America and Zod.
Apparently.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that looks good, and it's kind of going to sneak in under the radar, I think. And
it's hard when you have a movie that makes $175 million. You know, everything else at that
point
what's
weird
under
is
the radar.
174, and then second place was 7, third place was 6. So, yeah, there's that big, not as big as Avengers, because I think Avengers was like 206, and I think second place was like 3. So, I mean, there was the bigger discrepancy. But you go 12 movies deep, still making over $1 million. Like in 12th is Olympus Has Fallen, just under 1.2, and just under $1 million, Jurassic Park. So there were a lot of people at the movies this weekend.
There were, but I had read an article from the Wall Street Journal today. I meant to bring it with me, but I left it on my desk, which is an excellent place for it. They were talking about the kickoff to the summer movies and all of the sequels that are coming out, Star Trek, Fast and the Furious, Despicable Me, and all that stuff. Movie ticket sales in general, though, from the start of 2013 to now are down 12% from the same time last year. So people are out in the theater, but that's been...
To be fair, Hunger Games.
Yeah.
That was $150 opening in March last year. So that's going to account for a lot because you didn't have that.
We didn't have a Hunger Games.
You didn't have the big time blockbuster in a not blockbuster time. I mean, you had G.I. Joe, which was half of that.
Right. When you had Oblivion, which opened strong, what did that, like 60-70 the first week? So, I mean, maybe collectively we hit the Hunger Games, but I don't think the Hunger Games equals 12%. To this point in the year.
It equals a large chunk of it leading
a
up
chunk,
to now. Yeah.
Sure, but I think that you and I talked at the very beginning of the year how it was
January sucked.
January was not good at all. February was a bit better. It seemed like, maybe with Melissa McCarthy and Jason Bateman this year, that was kind of our push, sort of, to get things going. But I think, we're down 12%. Going into May, I think that's gonna change in a big way coming up in like the next probably month. We'll go from being behind to, even with Avengers, I think they'll end up being ahead of that pace. Iron Man 3, good movie, but it's no Jack and Jill. A mere 2 months before its release date, Al Pacino has left the cast of Despicable Me 2, one of those sequels that'll be coming out this summer, due to creative differences. Benjamin Bratt was signed on to replace him almost instantly.
Since when does Al Pacino have creative differences?
He wasn't allowed to yell as
much. Have you watched an Al Pacino movie in the past 15 years? Where were these creative differences? Like, he's made some terrible, terrible garbage. I don't think it's going to set him back at all. Apparently, he wasn't wrapped, so it's not like they have to go and redo all of the animation, because I guess Brat can step right in and finish it up, but I don't think it's going to matter. Losing Al Pacino does not cost them anything.
No,
from a
probably,
from a box office standpoint.
No, it might save them
honestly,
money.
Honestly, I didn't know Al Pacino was playing the villain until Al Pacino backed out.
I didn't know either.
Because I don't care.
No.
I want to see it because I love
the
first one.
And neither do 9-year-olds.
Exactly. So I don't think it's going to make a bit of difference. Sure, Benjamin Bratt's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
I like that they got him literally within like an hour, it seemed. Like the story broke that Al Pacino left, and then within an hour, there was a story that Benjamin Bratt... I mean, I'm sure there was going-ons, and but it was just...
They may have known that this was coming, and yeah. They'd already made... But, I mean, yeah, Despicable Me is a... This first one was so good, I can't imagine have to make too many calls. Hey, do you want to be in Despicable Me 2? I don't know, let me check my iCal.
Want to be in this movie that's going to make $250 million?
They can move some things. Speaking of villains, that Jane sure can't keep a villain. Bradley Cooper joins Michael Fassbender, Jude Law, and director Lynn Ramsey in the ranks of folks who have departed Jane Got a Gun. Natalie Portman, Joel Edgerton, and Noah Emmerich remain, but Cooper backed out this week due to scheduling conflicts. He wasn't set to begin filming until June, so there is some time to find a replacement. Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Tom Hiddleston, all potential replacements. Most of those guys are guys that they were looking at before.
Maguire and Gyllenhaal they were looking at before. Gordon-Levitt and Hiddleston are new names.
Have they passed on the dude? Because his name was in there.
I think he's busy now, though. Because I think it's a lot of who's open. Because a lot of, Gyllenhaal and Maguire, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt's not really going up for the same roles as them. Neither is Hiddleston, so it's just a weird... It's pretty much just who's free for 3 weeks in June to fill this villain role.
I'd love to see Hiddleston get it.
I would, too. I think Hiddleston would be good.
Yeah.
I still think the movie's going to be good. And a lot of it... He said scheduling conflicts, which I buy.
Sure.
Because American Hustle was delayed for a week or two due to the Boston bombing. So that's... And then he's got Hangover 3 promotion at the end of this month, so Cooper's a busy guy.
Yeah. Honestly, any of those names I think would be okay, but when we talked about the Thor 2 trailer, I think I waxed a little poetically about how much I like Hiddleston.
Oh, I'm going to wax poetically about him a little later.
That sounded creepier than I think.
While we're still recording.
Well, okay, folks, you've got that to look forward to as well. We've got a hell of an end of the episode coming up for you, apparently. From guns to sniper rifles, Bradley Cooper's American Sniper, the adaptation of the autobiography of America's most lethal sniper, Chris Kyle, now has a director in Steven Spielberg. Cooper has been developing the project since last year and is set to star.
This is an interesting one because his autobiography, Chris Kyle is the American sniper with the most recorded kills in history. It'd be easy to make this an action movie. It'd be very easy to take this property and turn it into an action movie. You bring somebody like Steven Spielberg in, I don't think that's the intention. I think it's Spielberg's not going to come in just to do an action movie. So I think it's going to be done justice. I think it's going to be more Zero Dark Thirty in tone than your straight up action.
I would agree with you. I think that Spielberg has shown that even with Saving Private Ryan, which was, I mean, it definitely had its moments where it was absolutely an
action
movie.
The action scenes were, I mean, not saying Spielberg can't do action.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that, you know, he will be fair to the story. And I think that the thing that I found was the best about Saving Private Ryan was the story. Again, it's, you know, you have a military story and Steven Spielberg is a guy that could tell that.
And you have Spielberg coming off, you know, years of couple. He's still getting nominated for Oscars almost whenever he does a movie.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper just got an Oscar nomination, might have another one coming on the way. So it's just.
Do you think this is a potential, maybe not for this year, but
it
a
feels
film
like
ball,
it.
A film ball pick?
It feels like it.
Yeah. All right. That's on like the way early draft board. This guy's a sophomore, I think.
Yeah.
Lady Got a Lord. Natalie Portman and Michael Fassbender will headline the next big screen adaptation of Macbeth for Justin Kurzel of Snowtown.
You know, when I complained with that Romeo and Juliet trailer because we've seen it so many times.
Yes.
Macbeth is one of those we've seen so many times and so many different variations. But you get Natalie Portman, Michael Fassbender, and Justin Kurzel involved, 100% on board. To see Snowtown and see how Kurzel handled the tense, like that was just a tense movie. Like it was insane the way he just toyed with tension. And I can see that translating to Macbeth. with this awesome cast. I mean, so far, it's still early, but I don't care about another Macbeth movie except this one. I mean, like, this is one way to get me involved. I love the director. I love the leads.
I guess if you hadn't seen any of them, this would be a good one to start with. Is one better than the other? I guess. Maybe this one will be okay. It doesn't do anything for me. I mean, if it was something... If there was something that was different about it, you know, we mentioned Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing. It's the same language, but at least it's...
And this is going to be a true adaptation. Yeah. This isn't going to be a, you know, it's going to be...
Set in modern times.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a true adaptation. But I look at Snowtown and I look at how he dealt with some of the moments in that. And there's a lot of moments in Macbeth that can lead to that kind of tension. And, like, even though I'll know what's coming up, I trust him to deal with it to where it's still an experience watching it.
I don't want to get off on a tangent, but, you know, we talk about, like, updating things. I catch a lot of flack for liking O, but I think, you know, for to take Othello and to kind of retell that story, but in a different setting, I like that. You know what I mean? That makes, you can know the story and kind of, you know, watch this movie, you know what's going to happen, but it's not like reading the same book twice. That I have a problem with, but I like that.
I didn't hate it just because Othello is probably my favorite of his, but that just came at a time where there were so many modernized Shakespeare, because you had the
Romeo
Ben Foster
plus
one,
Juliet,
the Ben Foster one, the with Sisko.
Get over it, Dave.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, there it is. Look at the big brain on that kid. So yeah, I think we've talked enough Shakespearean updates for one, right?
Yeah, okay. And enough Sisko.
Yeah, I think we've reached our Sisko quotient. Speaking of stuffy literature, Pride, Prejudice, and finally Back to Life. After years of struggling to find a pulse, the A-list talent, after A-list talent turning down or leaving the project, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, it's finally on its way to theaters. Lily Collins has signed on to take the lead in the aforementioned PPNZ. Burr Steers from 17 Again and Charlie St. Cloud will direct.
Did you notice the title of the movie now, though? Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies.
Okay.
They had to drop the first and.
Yeah, okay.
Lily Collins, I like. I like Lily Collins a lot. I think she's good, and I think Mortal Instruments is going to elevate her to a new level to where, yeah, they lost out on Natalie Portman. You know, Mia Wasikowska was attached at one point. They tried to get Scarlett. Like, they've
Keira
tried
Knightley,
to get...
did we try her?
I think they did, actually.
It would have made sense, wouldn't it?
I think she was before Portman, but I mean, Lily Collins might be elevated to that level to where you have this teen franchise star starring in a zombie movie. I think the book was cool. It's kind of overdone now, but when the book came out, it was something really cool and unique.
Well, and that was before Sensibility, Sea Monsters, Abraham Lincoln.
I mean, that's led to, though.
Right,
well,
yeah.
Well, I mean, Seth Graham Smith wrote Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, but the novel was really cool just to take the story that's in public domain and just rewrite it with zombies. I thought it was cool. I think it'll transition to the big screen pretty well. Burr Steers, 17 Again, and Charlie St. Cloud.
Where does Zac Efron fit
exactly
into this film?
Mr. Darcy, hopefully.
I didn't read Pride and Prejudice or the one with the zombies.
I think he would.
I'd like to be steadfast.
I think he'd be a perfect Mr. Darcy.
Well, I don't think you'd have to convince Burr Steers. I'm sure that's probably part of it. In his writer is like Zac Efron. So
17 Again was really good.
You can defend Charlie St. Cloud?
No.
All right. As long as you're not going to try that. From The Raven to Eric Draven. Luke Evans from The Raven. The Hobbit, Fast Six, has been cast as the lead in the Crow remake.
A couple weeks ago, I got all excited because it seemed like Hiddleston was the choice.
Yep.
Hiddleston was perfect.
Yep.
I loved Hiddleston.
Yep.
I don't care about Luke Evans. I love The Crow. I want to see an Eric Draven Crow on the big screen again. With Tom Hiddleston, or even with James McAvoy, I mean, or Bradley Cooper, any of the names before Luke Evans, although he was their first choice, but he passed because he's been so busy. Now they're filming it around his schedule, so like they're pushing it back. But I don't care about him.
Maybe this movie will make you care about him. He could do the world's fastest McAvoy turn.
We'll
It'd just
see.
Be in one film.
We'll see.
That is the task ahead of you, Luke Evans, should you choose to accept it. Kane and Chastain will entertain in Interstellar. Michael Caine and Jessica Chastain join the cast for Christopher Nolan's Interstellar.
Join McConaughey and Anne Hathaway. It's a pretty good cast.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'll watch Jessica Chastain in anything right now. Michael Caine is no surprise. He's been in
every Christopher Nolan
every
movie.
Nolan movie since Batman Begins, I believe. So I'll see this movie.
Yeah, at that point, like, you've got me. Like, I don't need anything else. I feel like some movies can just go away. Go away.
And like,
me in a month before you come out, and I'll be there. It's
I'm fine with that. But it's like, go back to 12 Years a Slave when we first started this podcast 52 weeks ago. It seemed like every week, like, I was fine done talking about it.
Yeah.
But then they'd add somebody
some
that I
awesome
love,
people.
And it's just like, this cast is awesome. And right now, Chastain is like that, to where you throw her in a movie, I'm instantly. She also signed on to star in The Zookeeper's Wife this week. I have no interest in that story. I want to see that movie. She's getting me in seats right now. Like, I'll watch her in anything. I saw Mama, for Christ's sake.
You'll even watch her in movies that she's not even in anymore, like Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the only reason you went to see that movie, is because of her ghost. You meant 52 weeks for us. That's pretty big. We've had a website for all 52 of those weeks. For the past several weeks, you've had an interesting blog post about your proposed cast for Josh Trank's Fantastic Four reboot. We've got some fantastic rumors with a March 2015 release date. Rumors are starting to come out about the casting of the aforementioned Trank Fantastic Four. Allison Williams of Girls is rumored to be the frontrunner to land the role of Susan Storm, with Michael B. Jordan, the main name attached to play her brother, Johnny Storm, a.k.a. the Human Torch.
Allison Williams is a boring name. Like, just boring pick. I don't think she brings anything.
Do you think she brings more or less than Jessica Alba?
It's hard to bring less. I put her in that same ballpark, though. I mean, Grant, I haven't seen a ton of her work, but just nothing about her gets me excited about this. Michael B. Jordan, I like. That's interesting. If it's not just to start controversy.
Because he's an African American.
Yeah. If it's not just throwing his name out there to kind of get the Twitter sphere going. But I like him. I think he would be good in the role. I don't know how much it would affect the... Because one of the most interesting things about Fantastic Four is the brother-sister dynamic and the, you know, brother-brother-in-law dynamic between Johnny and
Reed,
Sue and Johnny and Reed. I don't know how well that can play. It's 2013, so it's not every family is all white people. So, I mean, I can buy a scenario where Allison Williams and Michael B. Jordan are brother and sister, but I don't know how that translates. I mean, I'm all for it. I really am, because I like him a lot, and I think he's a really interesting choice.
Yeah, I mean...
I think they're both skewing a little too young, though.
I don't mind Johnny Storm skewing younger, if you're going to. Because, I mean, he's kind of a reckless cat anyway, which you would equate
with you. But he's an accomplished pilot.
If I can buy Marlon Wayans as a pilot in G.I. Joe...
I didn't.
Yeah, well, that's
that
just...
That's the problem.
That's more of a problem with you than the movie.
I mean, I do like that his name being thrown out there makes me hate the Allison Williams rumor a little bit more, because at least they're thinking outside the box for Johnny Storm.
This girl can't catch a break with you, man.
No, I'm not for her as Sue Storm.
I guess not. If you're wondering who Dave is for Sue Storm, you can check out the blog post, moviesonup.com. It's on there somewhere. I think we actually have everything sorted by blogs. So if you just want to click on the blog section, you can find it pretty easily. It'll have not only Dave's suggestion for Sue Storm, but also pretty much the entire cast. So check it out. It's actually a pretty fun read. From Fox to Marvel. Marvel also had their own casting rumors surface this week. Chadwick Boseman's name coming to the forefront to play the Black Panther.
That's another one of those. It's like, yeah, that's like the only... I said there's only two choices for Black Panther in Hollywood right now. Chadwick Boseman, if you want to go younger. Chiwetel Ejiofor, if you want to go just a little bit older. I think I would prefer Ejiofor, just because I think he brings a little bit more to it. But if you're not going with him, Boseman's really the only other choice that I'm not going
to
hate.
Yeah, so this obviously wasn't a big surprise to you at all. It may not surprise you to learn that we're going to talk some more Marvel in other Marvel news. Ghost Rider and Blade now join Daredevil and the Punisher as properties that are once again controlled by Marvel.
I don't expect to see either of them anytime, any of these anytime soon, because they don't really fit into the phases.
And Nicolas Cage is busy.
Yeah. I think these are just going to be all on the back burner for now. And then once phase three, phase four, once that kind of starts to tinker out, that's, I think, when you come out with these more standalone movies.
Once they can stop making Iron Man movies, yes. Or because right now, they, I mean, even if they wanted to,
I mean, I don't doubt that we'll see Blade and Ghost Rider and Daredevil and The Punisher on the big screen again. It'll be a while. Marvel's kind of busy.
I hope we see a Punisher.
I want to see a Punisher. The first Punisher I enjoyed. Yeah. I'd like to see a more faithful adaptation.
Or the one that the video was.
Thomas Jane one, Dirty Laundry.
Yeah.
I want to see that.
Sure.
But that's hard for Marvel to do now.
Because they're owned by Disney.
Especially owned by Disney, but I don't doubt that they could put out a violent R-rated one, but Marvel needs to focus on the phases right now.
Yeah.
Because it'd be very, very hard. Not everybody are very intelligent like us and our listeners. Like, the majority of movie-going public are idiots, and they just know about stuff as they see it. So for a Punisher to come out, people are going to assume it's a part of it.
Yeah.
And it's not.
I mean, maybe if they didn't brand it with, like, Marvel's name all over it, you know, and they just said, you could just think it was an action movie.
Or just release a movie called War Journal.
I guess you could.
I mean, you could.
Dirty Laundry.
Yeah. Or Frank Castle.
Yeah, whatever. There you go, Marvel. These are all the ideas that you need. Just do one of those and, like, make Dave and I, like, a producer together.
Although, I'm not anti. I wouldn't be opposed to a Daredevil movie and a Punisher movie taking place in the same universe.
Yeah.
Not in the same universe that they have going on now.
Right.
But its own universe.
Yeah.
I'd be for that.
I'm reading the Thunderbolts now, and the Punisher and Elektra are playing together. So, yeah, that could happen. Why not? What the hell? Gillian Jacobs, Leighton Meester, and Adam Brody become life partners. They will join Gabourey Sidibe and Abby Elliott in the comedy that sees Jacobs and Meester as best friends. Jacobs refuses to marry until her lesbian best friend, Meester, has the same right. That gets complicated when she meets Adam Brody's character, as a big vote on that issue is coming up.
I like the cast. It seems like a unique enough story, but it's one of those that it depends on how you play it.
Could come across as preachy.
Too preachy. It can come off too of the moment. But if it's played naturally, I love the concept. Love Jacobs. I love Brody. I think I like Meester. I don't know that I've seen her in enough stuff.
I think you like looking at her.
She's in that movie where she's on top of house.
The neighbors
the oranges.
One. Yeah.
It actually comes out on DVD this week. Maybe we'll talk about it later.
Maybe.
But I mean, that's interesting. I like Gillian Jacobs getting like co-lead roles.
Yeah, definitely. And good for Gabourey Sidibe.
I like her when she just shows up and stuff.
I just saw she's going to be in the new season of American Horror. Not that we talked about that very much,
she
but
is.
Yeah, good for her. She was really funny in Seven Psychopaths.
She's really funny just in general.
Yeah.
Like, I think she's funny. She's just an enjoyable person.
Sure is. Another funny, enjoyable person, maybe a little bit more nuts. Charlton Copley will be playing Chappie for Neil Blomkamp.
It's another one of those that's not surprising. He starred in District 9. He's the villain in Elysium.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for this movie. It's Neil Blomkamp's sci-fi comedy that's apparently very, very out there. And I think Copley is kind of the perfect guy to lead something.
He's funny
like
and
that.
Out there.
So,
yeah. And he.
I mean, I'm excited for this. I'm excited for Elysium. I'm excited for this. Anything this guy does, I'm going to be all for.
How pumped are you for Transformers 4?
Not at all.
What if I told you that the main human villain is Dr. Fraser Crane? Because that's what I'm telling you. Kelsey Grammer is the human villain in Transformers 4.
So Marky Mark gets the lead after internet rumors. Which apparently he offered that role to The Rock.
Which would have been amazing.
Yes. Which would fit The Rock's resume perfectly. He turns it down, Marky Mark. They're having a reality show in China to cast like extras for the movie. There's a reality show casting.
Are transforming cars competing?
I don't even know. And then you got Kelsey Grammer as the villain. This movie's going to be a wreck.
Oh, I know. The Rock, somehow, he would have willed it into being a good movie. I don't know how he does it. He's got to be a warlock. But speaking of warlocks, Daniel Radcliffe will headline Tokyo Vice as a reporter who goes head-to-head with the Yakuza.
I only found this interesting because we always talk about Daniel Radcliffe having a type where it seems like everything he signs on to is like
a period piece type thing.
It's like a dark, gothy type horror elements.
Sure.
Now he's just doing a Yakuza movie. So
Yeah. I mean, he's
the guy's interest isn't he's an interesting actor.
Yeah.
And like, I'd like to see him in something like this. So
sure. Just doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Fight with some Japanese mobsters. No problems there. Logan Lerman joins Brad Pitt and Shia LaBeouf in David Ayer's tank movie, Fury.
That's a pretty solid cast so far.
Yeah.
It centers on a 5-man tank crew. 3 of them are interesting. So it's, I mean,
I'm guessing Brad Pitt's probably the boss of the other two.
Yeah. I don't know how much you've read about the project.
Not much.
It's somewhat interesting, except that Brad Pitt's character's name is War Daddy.
War Daddy.
War Daddy. He's the lead of this tank crew. But Brad Pitt, Shia LaBeouf, and Logan Lerman in a tank together with David Ayers directing?
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be masculine, at least. Like, David Ayers is a masculine filmmaker. But
yeah. Yeah, he is. I mean, it's there will be a lot of testosterone
lot of
in that
testosterone
tin can.
Testosterone going.
I guess almost the opposite of that would be Britt Marling, Steven Yeun, and Michael Pitt. Well, I mean, Britt Marling's a chick. Steven Yeun from Walking Dead, not exactly the most like masculine dude. And then Michael Pitt will star in I, Origins for Mike Cahill.
He's the director of Another Earth, following it up with this. I liked Another Earth, he co-wrote it with Britt Marling, so I like the idea that's there. I liked how it was directed. So, yeah, him and Marling together again, yeah.
I'll pretty much give anything that Britt Marling's in a chance, because it'll be interesting at least.
Yeah.
I may not understand it, but I'll have an all right time watching it. I'll say that much. Michael Binder and Kevin Costner reunite for Black and White.
Mike Binder is one of those, like, it confuses me how his career has went. He was making really, really good movies. He made these two independent, The Sex Monster and Foreplay, kind of back-to-back, really good, quirky, like, independent comedies. Then he did The Upside of Anger with Kevin Costner. Amazing movie. Went unnoticed. You know, Rain Over Me with Don Cheadle, Adam Sandler. Way unnoticed. Really good movie, though. And then he hasn't done anything since then. That was 2007. So, for him and Costner to get back together, and Costner's back on the way up to a big-time movie star.
Costner comeback.
Yeah, I mean, he's got Man of Steel coming out. He won an Emmy for Hatfields and McCoy.
He's got the Browns thing.
He's got Draft Day. He's got the 3 Days to Kill or whatever, the McG assassin movie. He's got the Chris Pine, Jack Ryan
that
movie.
Could set him back, though. A McG film.
I like what he's doing now. I like the decisions he's making. That movie sounds awesome until you get to McG directing. So I'm hoping
Lots of things sound good until you get to McG.
But I want Mike Binder back on the map because the dude was making really good movies and he has such a unique take and a unique vision of the world that, and this concept is awesome. The concept is, it's a cool thing and it's going to be tricky to sell because it is very black and white. It deals with race.
Do you want to explain the concept a little bit?
Kevin Costner, his daughter has a black child, daughter dies, so he's raising the black child, but then her grandmother comes in, and it turns into a court battle between whether this baby should be in a white home or a black home, pretty much, which is interesting. Like, it's an interesting story.
It could be divisive.
Yeah, but I like Mike Binder enough that I think he can toe the line, but he doesn't get enough credit, because Rain Over Me was killed because it was marketed as a 9/11 movie. It was marketed as Adam Sandler's family died in 9/11. This is him getting over it. Every TV spot, every trailer sold 9/11. 9/11 is mentioned once in the movie. Like, you know Adam Sandler's family died. It's only mentioned once that they died 9/11. It's not a 9/11 movie. Like, the trailers and everything misled that and I think turned people off. It's some of Sandler's like best acting, and Don Cheadle was awesome in it. it should have been this big time movie. I like Mike Binder a lot.
Yeah, sometimes we talk about not being sure if a movie can be a little preachy, you know, with, we talked about the gay rights thing earlier, and this could be one that, you know, it would definitely fall under that heading as this could be, but with Binder, it's, you feel a little bit better.
With the director of Blank Man doing it, it's hard to think that it's going to get too heavy, but yet, like, The Upside of Anger tackled a lot of good stuff, and I mean, that movie is so good, and it's got one of the most gut-wrenching endings that you'll see in a movie. So, I mean, he's not just the director of Blank Man, because he does do drama well, but it's always got that sense of reality to it. So I'm excited for it.
Orin Urzel, also pretty excited. It's been a big week for that man. He was hired by Sony to write Men in Black 4 and begin work on rewriting 21 Jump Street 2.
So we're getting a Men in Black 4, everybody.
Hooray.
Let's hope they finish the script before they start filming this time.
I'm relatively certain that they have finished the script for Violent and Daisy. I am certain that they've finished a trailer for it because we watched it today. It is the movie with Saoirse Ronan and Alexis Bledel. They are teenaged assassins looking like they're going after James Gandolfini.
I had questions about this when I read the plot. Like, the plot is something that would interest me.
Sure.
Saoirse Ronan interests me. Alexis Bledel, I like her enough, but I didn't know how I would buy her as an assassin. The trailer's really interesting.
Really good.
It's a really good trailer. Like, it's a really good trailer. The movie looks like a lot more than you expect it to be. It doesn't just look like two girls going to whack Gandolfini. Like, it just looks really unique and interesting.
A lot of times we can figure out, okay, this movie is this plus this. This one is very tough to quantify.
Yeah.
But I can say that there were some absolutely beautiful shots in that trailer. Like, the cinematography for what is essentially a teenaged hit girl movie is incredible.
It looks visually stunning.
Yeah. Right.
One of the quotes in the trailer is, defies categorization or something.
And it does!
Because it looks like a story on, like, friendship and morals, and I think it's a lot more than just killing James Gandolfini.
Sure.
It's a really good trailer, because I thought I knew what it was going into it. I have a lot more questions about it after the trailer.
Yeah.
But the biggest one is, do you want to see this? And it's
the answer is,
like,
yes.
Very, very emphatic yes.
Yeah.
Like, I think it looks awesome.
It's close. It might have been my favorite trailer this week. I mean, it's up there. I think there's...
I think this week it is my favorite.
Okay.
There's other intriguing ones, but as far as how a trailer should be put together to make me want to see a movie without really giving anything away, this is how a trailer should be made.
Yeah, now just don't release a second trailer where you over-explain the plot and piss me off. You have me, Violet and Daisy. Just don't lose me. C. Tates loses his daughter and hopes to find her along with President Jamie Foxx in White House Down. Tell me that in this trailer, the President of the United States didn't say, get your hands off my Jordans.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Ah, Jesus.
This is such a tonal 180 from the first trailer. Because the first trailer made it seem like they were trying to make it something bigger. Like, make it, you know, they dropped it the week Olympus Has Fallen came out. And it made it seem like they were trying to sell it as more than an action movie.
It's not.
This one just sells it as Die Hard 3 in the White House. Like, I say that because...
Jamie Foxx is black?
No, but by Die Hard 3, John McClane was more of a jokester and more... He was a more entertaining character because they just kind of wrote him a lot looser. That's what Channing Tatum looks like. It looks like it could be a Die Hard movie. There's a lot more comedy to it than... Definitely than the first trailer would have led you to believe, and definitely way more than Olympus Has Fallen.
So what you're saying is they should have cast Channing Tatum as Die Hard's son instead of that stiff that they did give the job to.
Jai Courtney.
Yeah.
Young Han Solo.
No.
You know what, though? It looks fun.
Yeah. It looks like a fun summer action movie.
It looks like a dumb, fun, just let it go. Jamie Foxx is just letting it loose. Channing Tatum... I like in this kind of role. I think it'll be fun. I'm not going to say it's going to be a great movie, but I think it'll be fun.
Stop short of saying that it'll be great. The next one, it's another one. I think it's kind of tough to quantify. It looks interesting. It is Odd Thomas, Anton Yelchin in the adaptation of the Dean Koontz novel. He's got the power to see dead people, like dead monsters, and he's trying to prevent those monsters from eating folks.
It's a series, but I've only read the first book, which this one is based on. Yelchin is a good casting. Like I wouldn't have pictured him until I saw that he was cast, and it's like, that makes sense.
I mean, he did well enough.
I love him. His career, he was on the show Huff from years ago, a Hank Azaria Showtime show that got 2 seasons. I've followed him since then. He's made really good movies, and he's somehow not burst into that big-time leading headline. I mean, he had that...
The Fright Night.
Fright Night, and he had that one with Robert Downey Jr., Charlie Rose or whatever, where he was like a high school kid.
Oh, yeah.
But for the most part, he's not been in headlining big movies. He's shown up in them, Star Trek. The idea of him cast in this is good. I don't know how well it'll translate. Koontz is tricky. This novel especially is tricky because it does look like they're going to get the tone right, though, because it is supposed to be fun. It's more like a Dylan Dog, Dead of Night, but not that wacky.
It reminded me a bit tonally of like a Dante movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or the first part of The Frighteners.
Yeah.
And the book does get some Frighteners type vibes in there. It'll be interesting. I know I say interesting a lot. It's intriguing because I do like him as
casting. So you'll use a synonym.
Yeah. I don't know how well it'll translate, so I'm not 100% sold yet, but my interest is piqued.
And I mean, the trailer, at least visually, I thought it looked pretty cool. It was very CGI heavy, the monster things, some of like the dead vision that Yelkin has does look, I think it's well done in the trailer.
And it's not a final, this is just a sales trailer. The effects probably aren't final effects,
but they look good.
They look good so far. Yeah. I think they'll just look better by the time it comes out.
Hoping our next movie looks better by the time it finally comes out. It is a Kristen Wiig joint, which we talked about a couple weeks ago when we just laid out the plot. Sounded good enough. She has some kind of a psychotic episode where she has to move back in with her mother, played by Annette Bening. A dark comedy called Girl Most Likely that gets, I would say, a light trailer. I had thought that there was a suicide angle in the plot.
It's at the very beginning of the trailer.
But
she's hospitalized for attempting suicide.
Oh, did they say that?
Yes.
She's hospitalized for
a suicide attempt, and she's released into the care of her mother because she needs to be supervised. They're not going to release her on her own. So that's where Annette Bening comes in. Annette Bening looks like she's overdoing it. Kevin Dillon looks like he's overdoing it. It just looks like everybody's going big except Kristen Wiig, who doesn't need to. The trailer gave a weird tone.
This is a feel-good comedy about somebody that just tried to kill themselves.
It feels like Kristen Wiig is so funny, but her role isn't really the, hey, look at me, I'm funny type of role, but everybody around
her... She's almost playing the straight man.
Yeah, but everybody around her is trying to overdo it to go head-to-head with how funny she is, and it just seems like everybody's overdoing it. But I like Kristen Wiig, and I like her in a starring role, so I'll see it. I mean, it might balance itself out. Maybe they just got some of the bigger moments, because we had doubts about Leo and Django.
Yeah.
Because we thought he looked too extreme in the trailers. It worked.
Yeah, I think so.
So
I really liked him in that.
Maybe they just pulled the more out there moments to counteract an understated Kristen Wiig.
Sure.
It's a bad trailer. I'll still see it, though.
Yeah. The next one is a bit of a weird and odd apple, not odd Thomas. It's called The History of Future Folk, and it is about an alien bluegrass band, a bluegrass band that is made up of aliens.
Yeah.
From another planet.
They come to Earth to destroy it, but then they hear our music, fall in love with it, and they start a folk duo.
Sure. Who hasn't heard that story before?
But then are hunted down and they're actually aliens. Nobody believes them. There's really no way to describe it.
Other than how we just described which is exactly what the movie is.
I want to see it, though.
Yes.
It does enough to make me think, you're trying a lot of different stuff here, and I'm into it.
And I kind of want to hear the songs. I mean,
the songs sound really good.
Yeah, the one that they play does sound pretty nice. It's exactly, I guess, what you would expect aliens to write about, growing up on an alien planet and learning space words, Space Senses or whatever it is. But yeah, it definitely looks like an offbeat, to say the very least. But I think it looks good.
One of two ways. It could be really good.
It could be way too weird for its own good, I guess.
Or it could be way too weird and be really, really bad.
But either way, I think at least the songs will be entertaining. So kind of a weird batch of trailers this week. But, I mean, overall, I would say they at least look entertaining. There wasn't any one of them that I thought, ooh, I can do without this. There are a couple movies that will be out in the box office this week that I think I could probably do without. Wide release, Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby, along with The Peoples. Limited release this week, Aftershock, No One Lives, Java Heat, and Sightseers. Want to do Gatsby?
Let's do 90 for Iron Man.
Oh.
Second weekend. Yeah.
I'm gonna still take the over.
Okay. 60 for Gatsby.
I'm going to take the under.
That's interesting. So that's it.
That's intriguing. Wait, yeah. Wait, you didn't say either. What the hell? 90 for Iron Man.
I think it's weird because it's, I don't think they're both going to be over. If Iron Man's over, I think Gatsby's under.
And
Gatsby's
that's what over, I thought, and that's what I picked.
If Gatsby's over, Iron Man's going to be under.
So make your pick on Iron Man.
Iron Man over.
Okay, Gatsby, so you're going to go Gatsby under. So we both agree then. Except
I don't know if
I was a man about it.
I don't think that I don't know that the summer dollars are out there yet to where there's going to be two. Iron Man's going to bring in a lot more money, but I don't know that Gatsby's going to get that summer money out there just yet. Although there is a lot of promotion, there seems to be a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. It could do
it's got
90.
Stars.
It could do 90 for all I know, but
we got some people in our B.O.B. contests that are certainly hoping that it does well, so we'll definitely have to see. I have no interest in really any of the limited releases, so we'll just skip.
Sightseers is really good.
Okay, fair enough. I've got zero interest in Java Heat. I'll say that.
Aftershock released a Red Band trailer this week that was pretty much just the same trailer.
Oh, good. New to DVD this week. Jack Reacher, Mama, the aforementioned Oranges with Leighton Meester laying on top of House. I think that's how you put it. Upstream Color and Safe Haven, the Nicholas Sparks joint.
Upstream Color just got limited release in theaters a few weeks ago. Kind of disappointing. It's the follow-up to Primer. I'm really into Primer. I was not into this.
Is it because you expected to like it as much as you like Primer? Primer is one of those ones that if you haven't seen it yet, you're not going
to
like it.
I expected
because
it's
so blown up. This is the best movie ever.
I expected it to engage me like Primer did because Primer was so good because the characters. The characters were so enthusiastic that it was hard not to be excited about what they were doing because they were so excited about this.
Even if you didn't understand it,
yes.
You were right there with them.
This is the opposite. There's no excitement in this movie. Everything is so dull and just, it's like a flat line the entire time. There's no ups, there's no downs. It's just a solid, and there's nothing engaging about the movie.
The Upstream Color is black and white. So if you're not going to watch Upstream Color because Dave has turned you off it this week, you've already seen Iron Man, what might the people watch this week?
I usually try not to pull back from stuff that I've raved about earlier in the episode, but for Watch This Week, go watch The Upside of Anger, Mike Binder movie starring Kevin Costner, and watch Rain Over Me, his one with Adam Sandler and Don Cheadle, because those movies are really, really good, and for whatever reason, both went unnoticed. But The Upside of Anger, it's, again, one of the most brutal endings to a movie. I mean, it's heart-wrenching. So both of those, I'm a big Binder fan.
I'm going to go back to, we mentioned the Sniper movie with Spielberg. Actually, I was very pleasantly surprised with this Sniper movie with Jude Law and Ed Harris, Enemy at the Gates. It's old school. It's World War II snipers. And again, you think that it's a movie about World War II. It could be very action heavy. But it's a movie about snipers, so there's really not the over-the-top battle scenes. It's kind of like a chess match between two guys trying to kill each other from a long way away. And it was done well, suspenseful.
Like me and my buddy Westy used to play games on Halo 2, where we would just be one-on-one levels with sniper rifles. It was a lot like that.
I guess it would have been a lot like that had your epic duels with Westy been made into a film by Jean-Jacques Annaud. You would have?
Yeah. Westy would have been Ed Harris.
Or Rachel Weisz.
Would have made living with him a lot more fun if you were Rachel Weisz.
All right, so those are our watch this. This is of the week. We mentioned at the top of the episode, we've got some fun anniversary type things coming up this week. Can we tell the folks about it now, Dave?
Yeah, we're going back over the past year, and we highlighted five episodes. If you just recently started listening to us where we have two episodes, we used to do one episode a week where we would do all the news and trailers and have a discussion, and some of them felt kind of crammed. We just went back to some of the, you know, some of our favorites over the last 52 weeks of some of our favorite discussions from those episodes and highlighted them. And we're just going to release them as mini episodes. Going to do a new intro and a new outro for them. But then you'll have the discussions. There's movies we want to see remade, favorite remakes. That's all one. There's a technical discussion. We schedule a 24-hour film festival. Favorite chick flicks. And another one.
Favorite movies we loved as a kid that we still love today.
Oh, yeah.
I got the list right here. That's what we're doing.
So that's just, if you haven't listened for the last year, you probably missed out on these episodes because most of them are early on. If you have listened to the last year, you probably haven't heard these in a while. I think the most recent one was 5 months, or it was February. Yeah. So.
And they're not long, really, at all. So, you know, I stick with them. Some of them, the entire episode may be 12 minutes long. All the more reason, if you haven't listened to them, or even if you have, there's going to be new intros, outros, and we'll do some film selections that we haven't done yet. So, I mean, if you are really hard up for Dave and I to tell you more movies to stop whatever you're doing and go see Neglect Your Families and see, we'll go ahead and do that for you. Dave, we have anything we want to plug?
I have another show called Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. That's Eric and Dave. .com, Eric with a K, at Eric and Dave, facebook.com/Eric and Dave. Find me at Dave Bisella, BISCELLA, or DaveBisella.com. If you're in Cleveland area, Cleveland I Love You has its world premiere June 13th or July 13th.
Okay.
It's on
June
the internet.
Or July.
It's in the summer. It's a Thursday. You can find it. It's on the internet. But if you want to see, Made in Cleveland is the name of it. There's a new trailer for it that just dropped this week, so that's a terrible plug for that, but
did they change the name?
Yeah, a while ago.
Damn.
So yeah, that's a terrible plug for it, but if you want to check out Made in Cleveland, you can find it on the internet. It's got
starring
music
Eric
from,
and Dave.
Huh?
Starring Eric and
yeah,
Dave.
Yeah, me and Eric are in it. Listener Jason West has a song in it. So Jillian Jacobs and
Listener Jillian Jacobs and Busy Phillips.
Jillian Jacobs and Busy Phillips from Cougar Town. Yeah. So you can find it on the internet. I'm not good at plugging that.
I will find it on the internet and I'll watch it. Because I'm sure that Dave and Eric do a lovely job. And those other nice-looking ladies, too. You can find us on the internet at moviesonup.com, where you can find all sorts of fun stuff. The blogs that I mentioned earlier. Dave's got one about the Fantastic Four casting, which is kind of re-relevant again, as there's some rumors flying around about that. You can also find us on Stitcher. We're on there now. So if that is the podcasting service you'd like or would like to use, you can get it there. You can also get us on iTunes, where feel free to leave us a review, a 5-star rating, if you feel that's fair. We'd love to hear from you there. Or
Thing I did want to, next week, we usually try to give an update about what we're going to do next week. Next week is our long-awaited, much-anticipated, overhyped Chronicle episode.
We haven't overhyped it. But
I just did with
again,
that intro.
Relevant, Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan. It's superhero season at the box office. So we're going to watch Chronicle again this week and go over our thoughts next week. So
one of us is going to like it and the other one is Dave.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you haven't seen Chronicle yet, check it out.
If you have and you... If you have questions about what our opinions on certain things or
if you've got comments.
If you've got comments or if you want to know why one of us dislikes it so much, hit us up with
why
any questions.
Why Dave dislikes it so much.
Any questions or comments or thoughts you have about Chronicle, hit us up at moviesonup@gmail.com.
We've got that coming up next week. Later this week on moviesonup.com, you can check our mini discussion episodes. Until those,
keep it up.